You will never be the same.
And for the full catastrophe, he didn't mean it was all bad.
Oh, that I wasn't has a way of saying, don't play with me.
If I invite you to the dance, with the Lord of the dance.
God didn't call America to do what she's doing in the world now.
Please dance.
Welcome back to Untitled. As you saw last week, we ran a little long. So I wanted to welcome you into part two of kind of our first full episode, as it were. But we talk a little bit too long sometimes. And, you know, this is part two of that us talking for a very long time.
Yeah.
Well, the exciting conclusion. Da, 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 da. If only I could do a good Maisel Barrett impression, we would totally do it, but no.
Right. Yeah, yeah, right.
All right.
I think that gives us good something, you know?
Yeah. So stay tuned. We're going to fade to black and join us for the second half of the conversation.
Woo!
Woo. So we're digging into Hebrews 3 here, and by the way, you see me looking off to the side. Textbook! It's like kind of handy. A lot of the book of Hebrews, I talk about this, although I don't know if you've heard this, because this stuff is male, M-A-I-L, it's not like gendered writings. Because this is somebody's mail, we often don't think about what that means. But what that means is that these are specific ideas given to specific communities in specific situations dealing with specific problems and are not meant to be universally applicable all the time.
Right.
Crazy.
Yeah, I know, right? And so when you look at something called the letter to the Hebrews, can you guess what its purpose is?
I mean, I would guess that it's teaching for the Hebrews specifically.
Yes. It is not, however, written to practitioners of the Jewish faith, but to Jews who have switched over to Christianity. So it's written to Christians who come from a Jewish background. You'll find this theme of contextual application throughout the New Testament. In fact, each of the Gospels has a different target in and of itself. Fun side note, have you ever wondered why we have four versions of the same story in the Bible? It's because they're meant to serve different purposes.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
We have slightly different information.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Like Matthew, for example, is targeted specifically at people from Jewish backgrounds. Mark is the oldest of the Gospels and is meant to be as close to a kind of a realistic accounting as possible. Luke is the academic of the group. Fun fact, Luke and Acts are actually the same book. They're just Luke part one and Luke part two, the Lukening.
Judgment Day.
Luke 2, Apostolic Boogaloo.
Exactly. Yeah.
I like that one.
That's better.
Yeah. So like Luke and Acts are two halves of the same book. John is, again, the same story, but it's written from kind of a spiritualistic, kind of almost otherworldly perspective. One might say by a nut job. my mentor and I have very different approaches to the book of John. He's an absolute John fanatic. I'm kind of like not a big fan of John. But anyway, they all serve different purposes. They're for different ways, different contexts.
Right.
The theme continues throughout the New Testament. Same goes for Hebrews today. So this is specifically an epistle for Jewish believers around about maybe 80 or 90. So like all of these, even the Gospels, none of them were written down while Jesus was alive.
Right. Yeah, they all came afterwards.
Yeah, they're all later versions of it. And everything in the New Testament is something that was, when they brought it together to decide what was going to be in the Bible, they looked at all the different individual stories that communities were using. And the council that brought them together, which I believe was Nicaea, they looked, are these being used in ways that are consistent with our understanding of who Christ is and what Christ's teachings were and what Christ's mission were, which is why things like the infancy gospel of Thomas, for example, did not make the cut. Why?
Right.
Because Jesus makes clay dragons for fun and then nukes some kids in an Indiana Jones-esque way because they pissed him off. Yeah, that's not consistent with the Jesus we know. Like the community that was using it at the time.
I like that one though.
They liked it because it really just showed the power of Jesus, but yeah, and that was the thing they wanted to focus on, but it showed it in a way that wasn't consistent with who Jesus is. So that's like
they left the fig tree in.
Again, that shows you there's nothing wrong with Jesus getting pissed, but there's actually a whole sermon about why Jesus nuking kids in the infancy gospel of Thomas isn't, but the fig tree is, because it's important to understand what's holy about anger and what's not. Anyway, if you haven't been able to tell by now, dear watcher, I am easily distracted into telling stories about many different things. Let's talk about the Bible.
Hey, it's still the Bible. Come on.
Yeah. So,
focus.
Yeah, I have what one might call spiritual ADD.
Yes, you do.
And that's okay with that.
Yeah, we do so, too.
Hebrews 13. Now, what I like to do here is, you know, I've kind of given a good chunk of background to this and, quite frankly, most of the Bible at this point.
Right.
So I want to open this up to questions. I have my language resources here. I've got my tools. I am sure, in addition to verse 4, that you have many other things to question about. But feel free to lob at me anything that you want to hammer at.
A lot of talking.
Always have questions.
I do always have questions.
Always have questions.
Which questions are a good thing? Real pastors like questions.
They are.
You know, you said it. But you know I agree with you. So
exactly.
So I mean, my biggest one is verse 4.
Yeah.
It's like, may as well pick at it. Is, you know, let marriage be hallowed and honored by all, and let the marriage bed be kept undefiled, for God will judge fornicators and adulterers. Like, oh, mighty seminary attender, what does that actually mean?
Well, if you look at more evangelical tracts on this, the last check of that, fornicators and adulterers, is often translated as the homosexual.
Mm-hmm.
And that is, and I'm going to use a technical term here, so you might want to get your younger listeners out of earshot for this one.
Okay.
The technical term that we use for that translation is fucking wrong.
Man, yeah, can't imagine.
Right? I'm sure y'all have heard this before, but the term homosexual, whatever, doesn't actually enter into English translation of the Bible until like the mid-1600s. It's a recent addition.
Yeah.
So that aside, I am going to do something fun here real quick. I'm going to actually share my screen.
Ooh. Yay!
And I will bring this over here.
Technology magic.
I know, it's magic technology, but I'm going to do this because I want to share a website that I like using when it comes to figuring this stuff out, or at least I would if I hadn't actually closed it.
It'll come back up. It's all right.
Yeah. Anyway, now it just looks like I'm looking at weird stuff here.
What you looking at over there?
No, this is what are the things about some of the words in the Bible? They serve as the roots of other words in English. You'll see what I mean here in a sec. Okay, I got it up now. Which again was the wrong thing to say.
I was just gonna let it go by.
Yeah, we were just gonna let that fly, but you know, we'll keep it in now.
All right. So yeah, this is the word that I have open here. I was trying to get the verse open and I didn't quite get here. So this is the word that is at the root of sexually immoral here, and it is pornos.
Sure.
Yeah. Mm. Shocker. This word has its roots in Greek and has become a bit of a thing. So I'm going to go yes 13 pop over here, and we're going to look at the Greek here in context, and we are going to scroll down. That is in Hebrews 13:4. Okay, so for those of you who are good on the Greek, you can see this here, but this website, I absolutely love it because you can get your interlinear text, which allows you to look at what this means side by side with the Greek itself. So as you can see, first off, Greek doesn't literally translate to English. Otherwise, it would be saying, is to be held in honor, the marriage among all, and the marriage bed is to be undefiled, fornicators for and adulterers will judge the god.
Which, very different message. Yeah. Very different message.
A little bit. So, first off, literal translation ain't working for you.
No.
Yeah. So the two words we got here, and you know, Blue Letter Bible, that's the website I use for this. If you don't know your languages, please try not to use this without trained supervision, but you know, good to have a check once in a while. The two Greek words at the heart of us here are moichos and pornos, which are adulterers and fornicators, respectively. Now, we've got porno over here, but I'll pop it open anyway. Let's look at adulterers here. Now, this is, by the way, when a trained pastor prepares a sermon, this is a lot of what we do, is we bring out our Greek, we bring out our Hebrew, we take a look. I hit the wrong thing here. That's not here. I don't know why I did that. Anyway, here is our word here, moichos, an adulterer, one who is faithless towards God or ungodly. It literally just means someone who violates faith or an agreement of an intimate nature. So when we're talking mm-hmm. about adulterers, which, by the way, here's a fun argument that I had with my parents growing up, is premarital sex adultery? No, because everything that has to do with adultery means the violation of an agreed upon commitment. And if you haven't had one of those yet, then you got nothing to violate. Right. So,
almost like consent is key.
Yeah.
I've said this so many times, but that is the underlying theme of the Bible. I joked about Onan earlier, but that's mm-hmm. one of the best examples of consent being key in the Bible. That story, for those of you who mm-hmm. don't know, is Onan is tasked to sleep with his late brother's wife so that she may produce a male heir for their line, which I know, creepy as hell by modern standards. But that was a standard cultural practice in those days because it was a patriarchal society, patrilinear. And if he died before producing an heir, it was the responsibility of the brother to knock her up. That's just how it worked. Old cultures, what are you going to do?
Chris.
And so, you know, Onan gets to the sideways happy dance there and gets down near the finish line and, you know, pulls out and drops some artillery fire on the ground instead. And so this has been used for generations as like, well, clearly every sperm is sacred, right? So clearly, you know, masturbation is wrong. Except no, he entered into an arrangement with his brother's wife to produce an heir and committed rape by fraud by violating the terms of her consent. And so for that, God struck him down. It had nothing to do with the location in which he ended his happy journey, but everything to do with the actual human being he messed with in terms of consent.
Yeah.
So that, like,
crazy.
I know it's a little NSFW, but that is the best example of it, is God's all about consent.
No,
like,
that's a good one.
Strike someone down for violating consent. But we always like to look at it as, oh no, that's God being mad about something else entirely.
Right.
But that's why, like, moichos shows up here in Hebrews, is this is talking about a violation of consent. And then we drop over to pornos. Mm-hmm. So right now we're already in the context of a violation of consent is the worst thing. So mm-hmm. pornos here is, like, here is your outline of biblical usage. A man who prostitutes his body for hire, a male prostitute, or a man who engages in, and this is that kind of general terminology we see in English, unlawful sexual intercourse, a fornicator. Now, you'll notice that this is, first off, it's definition number 3. That is not anywhere near the top of the list. Mm-hmm. But second, unlawful sexual intercourse in the context of the ancient Greeks and indeed the ancient Hebrews, had to deal with the weaponization of sex as a term of as a tool of class control. When we saw unlawful intercourse in an American context, we're like, okay, you're having sex in ways that are not approved by law, like with other men or other women. No, like that's an American thing. That's an eisegetical approach. You're reading your position into it. In those times,
right.
It was sex in violation of consent as a way of abusing slaves or other people of the lower class to express dominance. Which was a thing that people did, particularly to male children that were slaves. You know, it was as terrible as it sounds. It was the ancient Greek or Hebrew equivalent of getting drunk and clubbing baby seals. You know, terrible, absolutely horrible. But it wasn't like something that had a parallel in what loving couples do today. Like it had everything to do with the wielding upon the innocent and nothing to do with how you expressed or understood love. Like that isn't part of the conversation in this verse.
Exactly.
Yeah. And this is why it's important to study your Greek friends. So
exactly.
Yeah. So that answer your question about verse 4?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah. Which 99% of the times, 99% of the time where you ask me a question, why does the Bible condemn being game here, or game, condemn being gay here? My answer is almost always going to be the same thing. It's not about that.
Right.
Yeah, it's not.
It's crazy how many times that's the case.
It's about the way
like all of the times.
Yeah,
every single time.
Mm-hmm. I'm sure at some point we'll cover all those little clobber passages that churches love to use.
Yeah. They
it's funny you say that, because the church that I grew up in, verse 8 was one of those, because you never saw verse 9 ever. It was just verse 8. You heard it all of the time, but you didn't get any of the other context. Nobody ever taught us the rest of it.
Yeah.
It wasn't useful for the control.
Yeah.
Right.
And verse 9 is, in the context of verse 8, super important. We're taught about how Jesus and God, and any way you want to slice the Trinity cake, is the same yesterday and tomorrow and the day before yesterday and at 6 o'clock noon tomorrow and, you know, 14 minutes from now. That's what omnipresent means in a temporal sense. Which, you know, sure, but that's often used to defend the idea that teachings are fixed, that what is true for us in relationship to God is going to be the same today, tomorrow, and yesterday, which isn't true.
Because it can't be, no.
And I know this is a shocker for a lot of people. We are not God.
What?
So whereas God may be the same yesterday, today, and tomorrow, we are not, and we change and we grow and our understanding deepens, which is why our understanding of the Bible matures as we go on, and we can look at it and say, now that I know this actually means something much deeper over time. I would dare say we understand the Bible far more fully and maturely than, say, Athanasius did or Origen of Alexandria or whatnot. You know, back in the day, you know, this was, we grow and we mature, which is why the warning about do not be carried away by all kinds of strange teachings, for it is good for the heart to be strengthened by grace, not by regulations about food. Now, coming out of the Jewish context at that time, regulations about food were the means by which the communities in those days held to that God is always the same, the rules are always the same, change must never happen, do not grow, do not have mercy and grace on people because they broke the rules. These are the rules God gave them, they're always the same. And this is the author of Hebrews, whoever it may be, saying, no, like grace is the
point. You're right.
Yeah, grace is the byword. That's the thing about which we are talking, and that's going to grow with us. Christ is the same, But you are not. We are understanding that. So don't get hung up on believing that you've got to just follow these rules that have been the same for forever and go into every situation looking for grace, looking for an opportunity to be graceful and merciful and compassionate and kind. Because if you're not doing that, then you're not doing the Jesus thing.
Right. For sure. Grace and mercy and love is every step of the way.
Yeah.
And I think we lose that so often. And it's so frustrating to see, especially with coming from where we're coming from, because we've talked about this. We have, you know, different upbringing here. But that's why it's so important of seeing this has not always been what's been taught, but that's what we were fed growing up. You know, we're 30, so we're I think kind of middle millennials. I'm not sure where we land in the generation. But there's so many of us that have walked away from the church because of teachings like that.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's, well, no, it said we couldn't wear mixed fabrics in the Old Testament, so we can't do it now because that's what's written, right?
Yeah.
And it's like, but then they pick and choose and decide which ones.
I once had one of my extremely right-wing aunts go on a rant at a family cookout about how it was biblically wrong to be gay while eating a shrimp cocktail.
Oh, that physically hurts me.
Oh man, it's almost like you've had some experience with things like that.
Oh, you mean like sitting at a church crying because my best friend just got murdered and having my then mentor tell me that he should have been looking at differently at who he was hanging out with? He literally was going to protect somebody. And because he got shot by her ex-boyfriend, she said it was his fault because he should have thought about who he's hanging out with.
I don't think we'd hit you with that one yet.
That is in the oldest and greatest traditions of non-denominational evangelical Christianity. Victim blame.
Yeah. 100%.
Yeah.
100%.
That hurts to hear. I am legitimately sorry that you had that experience. Like that is
painful. I appreciate that. That was kind of that moment that I was like, I don't want this anymore. And because I was being groomed to be the Kidman director there, and it fell apart right when that happened.
Yeah. And then again, they ask, why do people leave the church?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Can't imagine.
And this is a failing that I place at the feet of kind of mainstream Protestant Christianity, to which I have assigned myself, for the generations in which this parasite and this parasitical approach to Christianity, heretical would be the term I would use, during the time in which this has been growing and metastasizing, much of mainstream, very liberal mainstream Christianity, which is still the bulk of the Christian Church Universal, has held to a position that Martin Luther King Jr. would roll his frickin' eyes at, that you don't achieve peace by fighting with people, but by being accepting and understanding and tolerant of people. This is partly because I may not be as refined or compassionate a person as I ought to be. I believe there is a time and a place and a situation where you have to say, no, that's a heresy. You're wrong. And what you're doing is evil.
There are always times to flip the tables.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
There's always a time that you have to flip tables.
Yeah.
Like you can be caring and nice and empathetic all you want, but there are some times that you have to be loud and you have to actually stand up and make that noise and make the stink just to get through the barrier.
And to be clear, that is the part of this current situation that we're facing that my corner of Christendom needs to take ownership of, is the fact that we were silent while this was happening, and we ought not
to. Mm-hmm.
Right.
Like we were teaching within our own communities, we were doing things in our own way, we were welcoming people in, but for 100 years, the mainstream Protestant church has felt that we bring people into our space, we don't go out into theirs. And that's not even a Christian position. Like that was our screw up. We needed to be out there on the front lines of the AIDS epidemic. We need to be on the front line of all these political fights. Nowadays, we see folk like Reverend Dr. Barber, Seth Caperdale, and others that who are out there who are fighting the fight, trying to do it. But it is about a generation late.
Now it's an uphill battle.
Yeah. The last major Protestant who got out there and did the thing was that Baptist pastor, the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. And, you know, he got what, let's be honest, is probably coming to a lot of us who do this in the end. That is something that lays at our feet there. But just because we didn't say enough also doesn't mean that, you know, the parasite is Christianity. And that's
right. Yeah.
That's my word of hope that I really try to tell people. I know, you know, saying hashtag not all Jesus is not, you know, the most political way to put it. But it's not wrong. Like most of what a lot of folk have experienced as Jesus Christ in American and American adjacent society isn't. I mean, it's not, and this isn't a difference of opinion here. It is fundamentally, factually, provably with relation to the scripture, not Christ.
It can't be, not with how hypocritical and hateful it is. It can't be.
Right.
And we have.
I don't think the prostitutes and tax collectors would have hung out with a guy like that.
Exactly. And we have run afoul of something that C.S. Lewis described much more eloquently than I will in paraphrasing him in the intro to his book, Mere Christianity. If you ever read that one, it's a good one. By the way,
fantastic book.
C.S. Lewis, yes, I know, another old white guy Christian. he's one of the good ones, though. I do recommend reading the Chronicles of Narnia, sure, great. But like, read his actual theological writing, much better. But he described in his intro here what happened to the word gentleman in his time in English. Because, you know, in the past, in the English language in England, the term gentleman had a specific definition of meaning. It meant someone who had X amount of lands, X amount of money, and supervision over X number of people. And if you had these things, you were called a gentleman. And over a period of about 50 years, C.S. Lewis, this scholar of language, pointed out that people started describing a gentleman not as something that could be assessed in terms of adherence to specific rules or in terms of like measurable outcomes, but began to mean something that was an internal quality of a person, something that was, well, someone who is a gentleman in their heart. And once it became that, it became an insult to say that someone wasn't a gentleman. You know, to say that someone wasn't a gentleman before was simply to say, well, you don't have the right combination of lands, no judgment, no worries. Like, you can be many things, but that ain't what you are. It's the same as saying that I'm not a knight, you know. I think of myself as a fairly chivalrous person, but I don't have an OBE. I'm not a knight, and I'm not British.
Right.
Also fair.
Never had a sword on the shoulders, like, just to have it.
That you know of. Anyway. So the same has become true, he posits, of the term Christian. Like, for most of the time of the Christian faith, like, we have the fruits of the spirits, we have measurable outcomes, we have teachings of Jesus to which one ought adhere, and you would determine whether yourself or others were Christian based on their adherence to the tenets of Christianity, based on their demonstration of the fruits of the spirit and things of that nature. But right around the time the parasite got to be doing its thing, Christianity starts morphing into this internal concept, something unquestionable, the idea of your inward faith being the only aspect of what determines whether someone is a Christian or not. And suddenly it becomes a terrible thing to, you can't say someone's not Christian. Like, who are you to say that? Read the Bible, knows what the fruits of spirits are, like, knows the exact definitions of what we're talking about. There are qualities that define a Christian and qualities that define what we call antichrist. And those are not, I mean, they are, but they're not meant to be entirely judgmental in the way that we take them. You know, you say, so you're not being a Christian right now with the way you're talking. That's not meant to be like, you aren't a Christian, you'll never be a Christian, God hates you. No, like, get your shit together, brother. You're get in line.
It's more of an attitude check than anything.
Exactly. Like,
letting you know.
That's what makes me laugh, because you talk about the fruit of the spirits. You and our secretary Ash will regularly sing the song you learned in Sunday school. And in Sunday school, they hammer that into you in the evangelical faith. Mm-hmm. And then as soon as you hit big kid church, forget all of it.
Yeah.
I mean, one of our biggest TikToks played off of it.
Yeah.
We sat stone-faced behind the text of, they teach you to love everybody regardless of who they are as you come up in Sunday school. But as soon as you're an adult and you do it, you're a stupid liberal snowflake.
Yeah.
Right?
Every time.
Yeah.
It's just like, where's the line? Why do we draw the line?
You hit 18. That's the line.
Yeah. You hit 18. You can't be nice to anybody anymore.
It's almost like we forgot that God and Jesus specifically said that you have to be like the children to inherit the kingdom of heaven. We decided that once you stop being children, then you're a real Christian. And we kind of condescend to that. Like, I learn the most about God from my kids, I'll be honest.
Oh, yeah. 100%.
I've done my seminary study. I've suffered in the salt mines of theology here. And I learned more about God from watching my kids just play, you know.
Mm-hmm.
They say you should have faith like a child. Well, my children never stop asking questions about everything.
Yeah, exactly. Like,
yes.
And when I make a mistake, which, oh boy, do I make mistakes, you want to know who's the first person to call me on it? That would be my 10-year-old.
Yeah. Yeah, ours just turned 10 on Sunday, and she is the first one to be like, you messed up.
Right. Yeah. Or she recognizes that we did mess up, but she doesn't know why.
Yeah, and then she'll ask,
why is this bad? Like, why is this a problem? Because, you know, if I'm thinking as a 10-year-old and I don't have the full understanding of what right and wrong are and all of that, it's like, so I know that you guys are upset that you did this, or someone else is upset with you, but I don't get why, because it's, you know, whatever, insert 10-year-old logic here.
She's very blunt, so she doesn't understand that you have to have a filter sometimes.
Right. But it's they want to know why, and they're looking for the answer.
Mm-hmm.
And that's exactly, like you said, it's what's shut down mm-hmm. in the evangelical faith is, don't ask questions, it's just because I told you.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Because I told you is one of the things I really hate using as a parent, and I use it very rarely. And usually, when I do, it's usually followed by an explanation of, I'm not explaining why to this. And it's not because I don't think you need to know.
Oh, man. Lost it again.
No.
Oh, hang on.
It's all right. We'll just cut again.
Yeah.
Hey.
All right, we're back.
We're back.
All right, where did you lose me?
It was you rarely use.
Yeah, you rarely use the
because I told you so.
So I rarely use the because I told you with my kids, but I do once in a while. But I make it a point of when I use it to use it and say, look, I'm not telling you why this is a thing. And in my head, I'm thinking, I'm not telling you why this is a thing because issues of sexual consent aren't appropriate lessons for a 5-year-old.
Right.
And I'll sit down and explain it, and I'll say, I'm not telling you this, but it's not because I'm telling you to do this, and I'm not telling you why, because you haven't reached a point where you have the information necessary to understand my answer.
Right.
And that is, I think, a fair answer. And sometimes, honestly, I have occasionally found myself giving a similar answer to congregants. They're like, why does the Bible say this? I'm like, where you are in your spiritual journey, you don't have the context for me to be able to answer that satisfactorily to you yet.
Right.
So here's some required reading. We'll have some discussions on that. Right. I will answer your question. It's just not something I can answer to you right this second because it'll just be more confusing.
Right. You got to get through phase one first.
Yeah. You have that with non-believers a lot of the time too, mm-hmm. is they come in and they're like, well, why does the Bible say this? Because it, you know, objectively, just on their basic understanding of it, they're mm-hmm. like, well, this means God is terrible. And it's like, you haven't like put together some of these parts that we need to go back and we need to rehab that section.
I got asked that exact question about 2 or 3 weeks ago. Someone asked me, yeah, what about this part where we're talking about God's people smashing babies on rocks and stuff? Is God mm-hmm. really that terrible? I said, okay, let's look at what actually happened there. God said this, and then the people said, okay, let's do this, but with murder.
Yeah, right.
Like, it's not a commentary on what God says is okay just because it exists in the Bible. The Bible's often a commentary on God said A and humans did B, and God just facepalmed hard enough to make Captain Picard fall out of the captain's chair.
Right. Right. Exactly.
Humans were like, bet.
But like, really, that's one of the main things we forget about the Bible so often is God never put pen to paper.
Yeah.
Like, all of it was written by human beings who are fully imperfect.
And talking about other human beings.
Right.
Yeah. And let's be clear, particularly when we're talking about the Old Testament too, it wasn't a case of, you know, God was sitting in a tastefully lit stool off in the side here against a black backdrop, whispering the words while the poet sat at a 1950s typewriter, kind of punching it all out. Like, there wasn't that kind of direct and creepy sort of, you know, exchange of ideas. Like, we're dealing with a situation where, like, if we look at Genesis, for example, like the story of Noah and the flood, probably it's a thing that happened, but it's a thing that happened so far back in history that it was passed down by oral histories for an indeterminate amount of time until somebody got around to writing it down. And then it got then it got passed down for, you know, a couple hundred generations, and then it got translated, and then it got translated again and again and again and again and again, until now you're hearing, no, it took two of animal, every type of animal on the ark.
Like, it's like,
yeah,
you took two of probably some.
Best game of telephone ever.
Yeah, telephone with like language barriers, which is always good.
Yeah, and when you get to the behaviors of people when they get bent out of shape about religion, you can really just describe it as telephone, but for keeps.
Yeah,
with stakes.
Yeah. Telephone with consequences.
Yeah.
It's the most brutal game of telephone ever told in the history of mankind.
Yeah.
So I am not sure how long this video is going to wind up being. We've been at this for a minute.
Hey, you know,
yeah, it's been quite a while.
Hey, when they're the first ones on like this like collaboration stuff, I think people expect it to be kind of long,
because
we have to cover so much.
I'm sure we'll tone it down as the series goes on, or not, who knows. We're all chatterboxes here,
you know. They might just be on for the ride, you never know.
Could well be. I hope people get something out of it. I think we're gonna probably put a stop to it right about here, because, you know, I'm sure white people talk about God the movie, it's probably a bit too much for people.
Maybe a little.
We are like a full-length film right now.
Man, so I should be getting paid way more for this.
We need a director's edition. Wait.
Yeah.
Found it. There's my paycheck.
Yeah, out of my quarters. That's our address.
So,
but before, no, I mean, been fantastic.
This has been great. I'm looking forward to doing more of these. Before we go, do we want to make mention of our various websites and or media locations so that people can track us down?
Yeah, good idea. Absolutely. So for us here at Unfailing Love Church Fort Wayne, you can find links to everywhere that we are on our website at ulcfw.com.
Yep.
All right. And I'll put a link to that down in the description for people who are following along on various things, which have descriptions.
Right. We'll do the same when we post it on our channel as well.
Yeah.
And so same goes for me, basically, but with a different website, of course.
Right.
So my community, Unfinished Community, don't be scared off by the fact that our physical location is in Japan. The grand majority of our community is online and international. We got people in the East Coast. We got people in New Jersey. These guys are on it. And we do most of our...
We're on the Discord. I'm hanging out.
Yeah, exactly. We got a Discord server, which we're doing most of our stuff. So I'll put the link for Unfinished Community down in the description as well. I'm not going to bother spelling that one out because it's a little bit longer than that.
It's a little longer than ours.
It's a little bit longer because I'm cheap and haven't bought my own domain yet. So I'm still using it.
That's fair.
It works for now. But I'll put the link for that down below. And, you know, don't stand on ceremony. Like, if you are the sort of person who has sat this long through this video, get on my Discord server, man. Get in on the conversation.
Yeah, right? You belong here.
Yeah, hook us up with some info.
Yeah, at this point, in for a penny, in for a pound of it. You may as well just get in.
Hey, if you get on the Discord from this video, let us know and we'll get you like a digital trophy.
Yeah,
that you made it all the way through.
Definitely.
For real,
that,
yeah.
That is the thing I will have to do. So yeah. Yeah. So this is also available here. I got a podcast stream too, which if you're not actually already listening to it on the podcast, I'll drop a link to that down below as well. If you are listening to it on the podcast, I'll drop a link to the YouTube channel for it so you can go see us and our shining faces as we walk through the same feature length crap that you just sat for.
There you go.
Exactly.
All right. Well, other than that, I would say I wish you all a wonderful, pleasant, and loving and compassionate week. And, you know, if God is good and God is kind and we survive, we'll see you all next week.
Yeah. Exactly. Check out another episode of Untitled.
Yo, yo.
Yes.
All right. Bye.